You are listening to a podcast from WSUM. Catch UC Exceptional live on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison. Hello, Madison, and welcome to UC Exceptional, an interview show that you are currently listening to on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison. Each week on this show, we will have a guest on to get to know them and their story. I'm your host, Oliver Gerhards. This is my co-host, Force of Habit. Jeb is actually not here this week. Very sad. And today, my guest is, I guess the precedent isn't there, because normally I point at Jeb and he says his name, but he's not there. But when I point, and today our guest is...
Jamie Perez.
All right. So I wanted to have you on today because, I mean, very similar to another one of our guests that we had a couple weeks back, Jason Stevens. Sean recommended you. The story of being a journalist, focusing on storytelling, and sort of moving away from journalism more recently, and starting your own business focused on storytelling is very interesting to me, and I'd love to talk a bit about that.
For sure, yeah. Thanks for taking an interest in it.
Because I'm also a journalist who really likes storytelling.
And yeah, that's why I do this. Important.
What do you like about storytelling?
I love the platform that it gives people, and storytelling is something that can connect us all. Storytelling has been around for literally hundreds of thousands of years. It's how word of mouth first started to get from village to village, from town to town. This is before social media and the internet and the age of technology happened. We passed information through stories. And stories also give character, and they give story development or character development as well. And they just have a really innate way of connecting us on an emotional level. And I just love that stories can be so structured and personal. So storytelling can happen in so many different ways, and I just love exploring all of that.
I mean, you talked a little bit there about like storytelling as something ancient, and I always really like that. I've got that in my I take a folklore class, and one of the things that we talk about is there's this idea that humans are the storytelling animal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, really interesting. When did you first start storytelling?
I think I unknowingly started storytelling when I was really little. So I grew up in a home that was very just emotionally traumatic in a lot of different ways. And I didn't have anyone to talk to, and I just didn't know what to do. So I started actually writing my words down on paper about it was just how I felt. It was more of like a diary, but I found that I started rhyming words, like end rhyme. So things like very simple words that would rhyme together, like blue and clue, like that type of thing as a kid. And I would start writing poems out of my feelings. And so poetry actually is the first way that I started telling my story to an audience of none but me. So nobody ever saw these. They were actually very dark poems that were really sad, to the very just very emotional as a kid. And I feel like if I went back and watched or listened to them now and read them now, it would honestly just break my heart to see some of the things that I wrote, because I just remember how I felt. I don't necessarily remember everything that I wrote, but I always remembered how I felt and the stories that would come out of those things. So poetry is actually how I unknowingly got into storytelling.
Was it in like a book or?
They were just, it was just on paper. I would just write it down and then obviously got a laptop. Then I started doing it on the laptop.
Would you actually be able to go back and look at those, even though, you know, it doesn't seem exactly like a desirable thing to do? Is it an option?
So not exactly, because when I moved away from my house, so I'm from California. So when I moved out of my house, I actually trashed most of them because I was on a journey after I moved from home. I was born and raised in Sacramento, and then I moved to Los Angeles to go to school. When I was making that transition, I knew that I wanted to leave that life and those emotions back home and never touch them again. I just wanted to move away in so many different aspects of what moving away is. So I don't have any of them anymore, because I just wanted to forget about that. Looking back now, I wish I hadn't have done that, because it would be really cool to see what I came from versus where I'm at now in my storytelling, like the very stark contrast and how I do things. But yeah, I do have a poem that I wrote not too long ago that actually talks about that transitional journey that I made, that talks about the emotions that I once felt to where my mind is at now. It's not a poem from years ago. It's, you know, more recent, but it does talk about that journey.
How often do you find yourselves writing poems now?
Honestly, not very. That's kind of an art form that I still love poetry, but I've just found other ways to tell stories and other ways to get my emotions out in different therapeutical ways. So poetry doesn't come as often to me anymore, but like I would say maybe once or twice a year I write a poem that I'm proud of that it takes some time to think about.
So what brought about your start as a professional journalist?
Yes. So when I was going to community college, this was still in Sacramento, I sat down with a counselor. So I was just getting started in my general ed, and she asked me what I wanted to major in, and I didn't know. I had no idea. So she was like, well, what do you like to do? And I thought about my poetry writing. And so I told her, I was like, well, I write a lot of poems and I'm really good at it, but I don't really want to make a career out of poetry. So she gave me the option of, well, why don't you enroll in some journalism courses? Because journalism involves writing and storytelling, kind of similar to what you're doing with poetry. So I started taking journalism classes and fell in love with the broadcast side of things.
The broadcast, what elevated that broadcast? What was the appeal of that broadcast side of things as opposed to the print side?
I had an internship at a TV station. It was actually the TV station that I grew up watching, and I was just so fascinated by it. Like, I was just like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed going in, and I just thought it was the coolest job. Honestly, at first, I was attracted to the being on TV part of things, and I thought that was so cool to get that platform to be able to tell stories in that way. And I felt that more people would watch TV than would read a newspaper. So I felt that it had a bigger reach.
So to sort of elevate past that educational part of your life, what was your first job as a journalist?
Not speaking about internships, right? Like job.
Job.
Yeah. So after I graduated from California State University Northridge with bachelor's in broadcast journalism, I got accepted to an ABC station in Sioux City, Iowa as a multimedia journalist. I really played every role in the newsroom there, but that was the role that I was hired for.
Was there much support as a multimedia journalist?
No. As a multimedia journalist, that is essentially like it's in the name that you're doing everything by yourself. So you're finding your own story ideas, you're setting up the interviews, you're filming, editing, being on camera to present it, and writing up the story for the website at the end of the day, all on deadline, every single day.
So how long were you in Sioux City, you said, right?
Yep.
How long were you there for?
2 years. We run on 2-year contracts most of the time in TV news.
Do you have any good stories from your time in Sioux City?
I mean, there's lots of stories personally that happened to me, but I'm assuming you mean on-air stories.
Honestly, whichever floats your boat.
Sioux City, personally, was a very difficult change for me. I mean, I went from Los Angeles, California to Sioux City, Iowa. Very huge difference in lifestyle, culture, everything. Personally, it was very hard for me, and I, being completely candid, like, I absolutely hated it there, but I also made some of my very best friends there as well. Like, we all worked at the same TV station. We all kind of trauma bonded over the same things and some of the things that we went through being out in the field and really learning what it's like to be an MMJ and get your feet very dirty, doing all the things, all sorts of things that you couldn't even possibly imagine that you would have to do as a reporter. So that's just kind of like a personal growth. It gave me a very thick skin to be placed in an environment where I was very uncomfortable. But in terms of on-air stories, I would say that there was a story that I did about a man who was teaching his son who had a disability to play badminton. I was trying to think of the name. And I can't remember exactly like the context of the story now because it was so long ago. But I, as someone who never wants kids, watched this man and his son and the relationship that they had. And it made me want to have a kid of my own, seeing their relationship and what could be. And that really came out in the story on camera and on the air when it actually played on the newscast that night. So it was just a really heartwarming story that I really appreciated.
From LA to Sioux City, what was some of the biggest changes you noticed?
Ooh, how little there was to do in Sioux City compared to LA. Very big shift in the diversity in LA versus Sioux City, Iowa.
Yeah.
The weather, obviously. I went from being sunny and beautiful all the time to experiencing every season. That was most of it. It was just very hard as a 22-year-old to make that switch.
How many people live in Sioux City?
Less than 80,000, I think.
Yeah, that's a...
It's a small city.
Yeah, magnitude smaller than LA.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So what was your next step after Sioux City?
Yeah, so I was choosing between a job between Savannah, Georgia and Madison, Wisconsin, which I actually didn't even apply to the job that I ended up taking here. The news director sought me out, but I ended up choosing Madison after that. So I was in Sioux City for 2 years and then decided to come to the CBS station in Madison.
What station did you say that was?
The CBS station. So it's Channel 3000, Channel 3 here.
What did you do at Channel 3000?
So my job title was also the same as it was in Sioux City, MMJ. But I also filled in at the anchor desk, which I also did in Sioux City. So yeah, it was pretty much the same role, just in a bigger area.
So why'd you go for Madison over, you said Savannah, Georgia?
Yes. Work is most of your week, right? I mean, you spend most people spend Monday through Friday at work and then they have the weekend. So like 80% of your life is spent at work. I knew that the next place that I was going to go, because I did not love my time at the station or the city when I was in Iowa. So I knew that my next move had to be somewhere where I was going to be happy at work. Savannah actually sold itself, like, life-wise, way more than Madison did for me. Savannah is gorgeous. Like, the place sold itself. But when I was choosing between the stations, I felt more at home and I got a better vibe from the station in Madison than I did at the station in Savannah that I was applying for. So I knew that whichever one I picked, I had to be happy both in professional life and personal life.
Do you have any, I mean, so it's been about 2.5 years since your last article on Channel 3000. I guess what's changed since then?
A lot has changed. I mean, I went from working for somebody, storytelling, to storytelling for myself, or not necessarily myself, but I started my own business, telling stories for businesses and nonprofits. So a lot has changed. I mean, my whole life has changed because of that transition, and my lifestyle has changed. My time management, the freedom that I have has changed. Yeah, everything.
So I guess thinking about the shift from journalism towards running your own thing, I mean, you mentioned freedom. What kind of changes have you seen in your own freedom? I guess if that makes sense.
Yeah. I never plan on being an entrepreneur, but now that I am one, I can't imagine ever going back because of the amount of freedom that you get from working for yourself. I get to make my own schedule. I get to decide every single thing that happens during my day. I don't have to ask permission to go on vacation or how long I can go on vacation for. I don't have to ask permission to go to a doctor's appointment in the middle of the day. I can do whatever I want during the day. So when I talk about freedom, I get to decide how much money I make every year. I get to decide what my role is for the day. I get to decide what I'm doing. Like, it's just every single thing in my life is now my decision. I am solely responsible for the success or the failures that I experience.
Do you feel that leaves you tending to spend more or less time at work?
I spend time differently at work. And I also don't think of work just as what I'm doing in the video business, because they say that as an entrepreneur, you're technically working 24/7 because you're always in your mind, you're always thinking of new ideas and like, oh, I got to fix this in the morning. So it's like that mindset that you're always working, but it's so different than when you're working for somebody else, because if you're coming home after work and you're still thinking about, oh, I got to respond to that email, oh, I got to, like, you're not getting paid for that time, right? Like your salary or your time clocks out when you leave the building. But as an entrepreneur, you have to think of ways to price yourself so that you're making money for 24 hours of the day of your time. So yeah, I hope that kind of touches that.
I mean, I kind of get that. It's like a, it's more, I mean, you've got the freedom to choose when you go into work, but work is always a part of what you're, mm-hmm. it's always on the mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your company is called Beyond Works Productions, mm-hmm. yes? Can you explain in, give the people at home a little layman's terms, a little rundown.
Of what Beyond Words is?
Yes.
Yes. So Beyond Words Productions is a videography and storytelling company that focuses on sharing heartfelt and emotive stories for businesses and nonprofits. So we are not a company that does product showcasing videos or a video that just says, here's who we are and these are our services or here's our discounts. Like that's to me more marketing and commercial types of videos. I am telling stories that evoke emotion. So a lot of my clients now tend to be nonprofits because nonprofits tend to understand that heartfelt element of the impact that they're making. But I try to get for-profits as well to understand that the same concept can be applied to everything that they're doing.
So at Beyond Words, how many clients have you had?
Over 160 by now.
So how many, I guess, clients are you working with on, you know, any given week? Right, and the process is longer than a week for, right?
Yeah, usually I'll be with a client for anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, sometimes longer, just depending on the scope of work or the project.
How many people do you have working at Beyond Words?
It is just me.
It is just you. All mm-hmm. right. So that... So what is it? How did I ask how many at a time?
I can usually handle about 5 clients at any given time.
So you've usually got, you're usually working with, yeah, I imagine you're usually at the max just doing the math on 160 over 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the, I guess I'll just lead with, what are some of the companies you've worked with and some of the stories you've told?
A lot. I mean, a lot. There's a lot of, I mean, there's a like, for for-profits, a lot in the trades. I don't know why that is, but to like have this domino effect in the trades. So like Exceptional Exteriors is one of the companies that I've worked with. So they do home remodeling. Clear Vision Cleaning. I think they're now called Clear Vision Pro Wash. They're power washing. In terms of nonprofits, I mean, that runs the whole gamut. I mean, from Chrysalis to Omega School, United Way, Free Bikes for Kids, Do Good Wisconsin, like Geo's Garden. I mean, there's so many nonprofits.
So I'm torn. Would you like to talk about, I want to ask about your first and your favorite. Which one do you want to talk about first?
They're both the same.
They're the same. All right. Now that's fun. So tell me about your first and your favorite client.
My first and my favorite was Geo's Garden. They were actually a organization that I created my first heartfelt story for. And they were my favorite because the story that came out of it not only gave them a record fundraising year at the fundraising event that they played my video at, but I have used that story to showcase as an example to so many people since then. That story has gotten me to where I am today. If I hadn't done that story, I think I would have had a lot harder time getting to where I am now. Because that story, they let me have like a ton of creative control as to how the story was told. It was filled with emotion. I mean, every single thing that you could possibly dream of having in a story to put those elements together. I mean, it checked the box of every single thing that was there. The story was so emotive. It brought, like, there was not a dry eye in the room when that story played at their fundraiser. And to this day, it's just such a good example of why story matters more over production value. Because that's that story that I filmed 2.5 years ago, I mean, if, when I look at that now, there are many things that I would have done differently now, like quality-wise. But I look at it and it is still like the rock-solid example of how a story should be told. And I love sharing that example with people.
So how long was it?
It was over 5 minutes long.
Is that longer than normal?
It sounds longer. Yes. Yeah. I usually make videos that are around 2 minutes is the average.
So you mentioned how there are things you would have done differently. What are some of the changes you've made in the way that you produce this content for your clients in those 2.5 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've invested in more expensive and just more equipment to be able to bring up my production value. I mean, I've got drones now. I've got cinematic cameras and a whole bunch of different lenses and microphones and gimbals and just all these toys to play with. So there's that. But I mean, there's also the difference in how I tell stories now as well. I mean, most of my stories, they're 2 minutes or less for a reason because I appeal to people's short attention spans online. That one was a little bit different because it was specifically meant for a fundraising event where you already had the audience's attention from people who have paid to be there. I still do some of those videos now, but I still don't recommend longer than 5 minutes because people just tend to stop watching or kind of tune out after a certain point. So yeah, I would say that those are the biggest changes.
And what's been your most highly, what's been your video with the highest production value?
I'm actually working on that right now. So I'm doing a series of videos for the Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce for part of their diversity and talent recruitment projects. So these videos are interviewing people of color who are not originally from Madison about how they moved, why they moved to Madison, and how they've created a life, a career, and made a difference here. So there's lots of hours of drone video showing the skyline of Madison. There's lots of different interviews being involved, and I'm bringing out all the tools to film every element of it.
Yeah. I don't know. When I asked, I kind of figured it would be whatever you're working on right now. That's kind of how it trends.
Yeah, definitely.
But earlier when you were talking about the job you did for Geo's Garden, you said it was your first heartfelt story. Did you feel that there was sort of a lack of heart in your work as a journalist? Not in the...
I know what you mean.
You get it.
What you mean. Yes and no. I feel like I became known for my ability to tell heartfelt stories. I mean, that's pretty much solely what I was pitching in the news meetings every morning. We had editorial meetings where every reporter would have to go through their list of story ideas that they would come up with from the night before. And I would always pitch the heartfelt stories. So I actually kind of got the nickname of B-block reporter. And that means in news, your A-block is the first 10 minutes of the newscast before the first commercial break. Your B block is the section that comes right after that commercial break. And they call it that because most people only will watch the first 10 minutes, or that's where you get the most viewership. And that's where all the hard news is, the crime, the politics, the if it bleeds, it leads types of stories. My stories ended up in the B block because they were more of the heartfelt, softer topics, compassionate storytelling. That's what I loved to do, so I didn't mind not being an A block reporter. That's what I became known for. But at the same time, one of the reasons I left news was because I felt like that type of storytelling is in demand from people. And I would hear a lot when I would go out into the community that people don't watch the news because they feel that it is very negative. And that's because those are the stories that drive sales, unfortunately. But the ratings show, sales show that. We may not all feel that way out in the public world, but that is data. There is data to support that. But one of the reasons that I ended up leaving was because I felt like sometimes my stories that I pitched for the day that I wanted to really cover that were about heartfelt things and impacting the community were pushed to the back burner to cover something that needed to be said that day, something more immediate, something a little bit harder news. And if there were no other reporters to cover it, I had to toss my story to the side and go cover the hard news. So now, obviously, I'm not covering hard news stories anymore. Now I try to cover heartfelt stuff most of the time. So there was a lack in terms of news in general. But in terms of what I was focused on, I would always gravitate towards the compassionate storytelling.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way, honestly. My favorite stories to report on have always been that sort of more feature stuff, but I'd always thought hard news and soft news, but that heartfelt is a good word to throw in there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, while we're talking about sort of the contrast between the work you did as a journalist and the work that you do now, is there anything that you miss about working at Channel 3000?
I don't want to say Channel 3000 in particular, but just news in general. I would say for the most part, I don't miss it. But if there were things that I wish that I had now, I mean, I think the main thing is the platform and the visibility that news stations have. Because when I did get to tell those compassionate stories, like say that there was a GoFundMe link attached to something that I was saying, like if you would like to donate to support this family after whatever they just went through. And I would see the donation link just blow up. Like, they would raise so much money so quickly. And I'm like, I wish I had that viewership to be able to do that for somebody now. Because I started my own business, like, from scratch, right? Like, I don't already have this huge following of people that are going to watch every story that I put out there. But the news, however, does have a loyal following of people who watch every day or watch consistently enough where that story can get clicked on and shared and it can take off. I don't have that type of platform now because I'm just a small local business and I have to build to get there. So that's probably the one thing that I do miss.
I am curious about that term, small business. How does it feel being the little guy, I guess?
It has given me a huge respect for any entrepreneur and business owner because I have learned along the way how hard it is to run a business. And like, I am a very small operation. Like, it's just me. I don't have employees. I don't have payroll. I don't have workman's comp to think about. And it's a lot of work just managing the things that I have to do for myself, like little things throughout the day that you would never even think of if you don't have a business. But I really respect small businesses, and I think that they are the bread and butter to our economy and what makes everything run. And I just have a huge respect for it.
Because I guess, I mean, you know, you're a small business, and you're also working with so many other small businesses at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess speaking, what's sort of the difference between doing work with a for-profit and a nonprofit organization?
When I work with nonprofits, they tend to understand storytelling a little bit more, and they also let me have a little bit more creative control to it because the people who are working in nonprofits are already stretched so thin because they all wear so many hats trying to do important work. So when they hire me to tell a story or do their video, they really let me have a lot of control over how the video turns out, and they trust me to do that. With for-profits, it's a little bit more you have to go through like a chain of command of approval process. And a lot of them are still in the mindset of corporate marketing for video. And so they think of script writing and storyboarding and all this planning. And that has been a little bit of a challenge for me to get them to understand, like, look, what I'm doing is authentic storytelling, which means there is not much planning that goes into this. There's not much storyboarding. There's no script. I just want to show up with the camera, have a conversation with you, and conduct this interview because when I do that, I get the most authentic sound. When it is not planned for, it is coming straight from the heart, and it is just raw conversation. So that's the main difference. Yeah, nonprofits just, they get storytelling a little bit more than for-profits do.
Something that I've found in running this show is that certain people are kind of more aware of what their own story is. Is that something that you've experienced in what you do?
Yeah, I think not a lot of people know what storytelling truly is. I've held a lot of different art of video storytelling workshops free for people in the community that I can see that there's a huge demand for people that want to understand what this is. And I can see when I'm leading these workshops, like something clicking in people's minds, like the light bulb goes off, like, oh, now that I see an example of what kind of story can be told for a for-profit or a nonprofit, like now the wheels are turning, and then they have these ideas of like, okay, how can I put that into my business, or how can I use that idea and frame my own story from that? So yeah, I just think that although storytelling is such an age-old concept, I think because of technology and traditional marketing, we've gotten so far away from that authenticity.
Speaking of marketing, sort of, I mean, there have been a couple comparisons made between what you do as telling a company's story and what sort of an advertiser might do as marketing for a company. I mean, do you see your services providing sort of a different or more unique version of that same offer?
Yeah. So I don't love the term marketing, because when I think of marketing, I just think of very inauthentic, commercial, super salesy and super adsy. And like, to me, I personally don't like that stuff. Like if I see a commercial come on, like limited time offer, here's our services, like I just immediately tune it out. Like I just don't listen to it. I just feel like I'm trying to be sold something. And I always tell businesses that what you're doing is not unique. There's a 1,000 people out there that are doing the exact same thing that you're doing, but who you are and who you're impacting is what you're supposed to sell. You sell an emotion. You don't sell a product or a service. So an example that I like to give is for the company that I told you about, Exceptional Exteriors. They are a construction and home remodeling for-profit company. You would not think on the surface level that they are an emotive business, right? They're just doing manual trade work. Instead of building a video around, here's our products and services. We can do windows, doors, siding, bathrooms, kitchen remodels, whatever. That's fine, but you can throw a rock and find another company that can do that exact same thing. So that's not your selling point. What is your selling point, though, is how did you get started? Why do you care about this business? Who are the people that you're impacting? So rather than do a video that focuses on products and services, we focused on the founder's story, how he ended up getting in a lot of trouble as a teenager, which brought him to a nonprofit program called Operation Fresh Start, where he learned to build homes for people. He got a job at a local remodeling company here, got laid off during the pandemic, and didn't want to go back to his old ways that got him in trouble in the first place. So he started his own company, hired his friend, and then started hiring employees that were once in the same position that he was as a rebellious teenager, and gave them a second chance, because home remodeling for him was his second chance to put him on the right path. And now everybody that works under him has had a rough life and needs that second chance. So the whole video's concept was about Exceptional Exteriors giving people second chances when you go with us as a company. And when you sell that emotion to people, they want to work with you, and they remember your company rather than just saying, we do windows and doors.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's I'm sold. So when you were talking at the start, you said like limited time offer, and that like set me off, because I like started thinking about radio rules. Can't promote this, can't promote that. And that also reminded me that the opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the views of WSUM, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, or its Board of Regents. Anyway, why did you make the change from journalist to storytelling small business owner when you did, you think?
At the time that I decided to leave news, I was really reflecting on my emotions with it, because I never thought that I would leave that industry. Like, my plan was to climb to the top, end up on the Today Show. Like, that was the goal. And that was, I honestly think that that was a very achievable goal for me. But I don't think I was willing to play the long game to get there, and all the things that I would have to deal with, all the things that I would have to sacrifice along the way to get there. So I feel like the path that news was leading me on was no longer conducive to what I really wanted in my personal life. I don't discourage anybody from taking that path if that's for them. I just decided that for me, that's no longer what I wanted to do. And because I wasn't getting to tell heartfelt, compassionate stories full time, that's just not what the news is. You know, eventually I just decided, like, I'm going to just do this on my own and see if there is a demand. And clearly there is.
Yeah. When you made that switch, were you sort of surprised by the demand that you found?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at how successful it became so quickly, especially for someone like me. Like, I don't have a business degree. I've never owned a business before. And being a business owner was never part of my plan. So I was kind of learning everything day by day as it was going. And like, I feel like it just transformed me into such a better person. Like, just in terms of telling stories, it made me more compassionate. But I also feel like it made me more patient with myself. I mean, I am just not a patient person at all. So it taught me to be patient with myself. It also just gave me a lot of grit because you make a lot of failures when you're on the road to success. Like they say it's very lonely at the top because you have all these different goals and things that you want and that you strive for in life, that you have to sacrifice different things along the way to get there. So yeah, it's been a learning curve for sure.
So how long was it between when you started Beyond Words and when Geo's Garden came to you?
It was almost immediate, and that was because the founder of Geo's Garden is a news anchor at my old station. So we already had the connection. So it was actually pretty easy. But news helped me get a lot of the clients that I have now because a lot of the people that I met in the community was from my job as a news reporter. And so when I told people that, like, hey, this is what I'm doing now, I was just kind of planting the seeds within the community to let people know that, like, this is the path I'm on now. If you ever need video storytelling, let me know. And it just kind of grew from there. So I really became good at utilizing my resources that I already had.
So I don't have many other questions about your business, but do you have any pets?
Do I have any pets? Yeah, I have two dogs.
Tell me their names and occupations.
Well, freeloader number one, her name is Raven. She's a black lab. She is almost three years old. And the other one is Izzy. She is 8. And she's a Norwegian elk hound.
What's a Norwegian elk hound?
It's like a little, it's like a not a little husky, but it's like a smaller version of a husky. She's not little, but she's like medium size.
So to get onto more maybe a more normal question, is there any sort of advice that you have for people who are sort of starting on a similar path to the one that you have, I guess, taken?
Yeah, I mean, one of the hardest lessons that any entrepreneur has to learn is that you need to have a good relationship with failure. Because failure is inevitable, it's going to happen. And just to not think of it as failure, but think of it as a lesson to learn from. I love the quote that says, the difference between winners and losers is that the winners have failed more times than the losers have even tried. They get back up, they take it as a lesson, they become the victor of their story instead of the victim. Instead of asking yourself, why is this happening to me? You ask yourself, why is this happening for me? And when you take that lesson and you make it about growing instead of a loss, that shift in your mindset will propel you further than somebody that maybe has more talent than you in what you're doing. Talent can only get you so far. But it's your work ethic and your willingness to get back up after failing so many times, even failing publicly in front of people. Like, you have to be able to pick yourself back up, because as a business owner, when you're marketing yourself and like you make mistakes, people will notice this, and you have to be okay with picking yourself up and just making a bigger comeback the next time.
So it's kind of like everything that happens to you happens for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about the end of our program. Is there anything else you would like to throw on before we wrap it up?
Yes. So final thought is just the name of my business, Beyond Words Productions. My mom actually came up with that because a lot of people ask me about the name of it and what it means. So when I was starting my LLC, I had no idea what to name my business, and I really wanted it to be like a creative play on words somehow, but didn't know where to go with that. So I asked my mom for some insight, and she said, well, knowing that you like to tell heartfelt stories, she said, if a picture says 1,000 words, your videos will leave people beyond words. And this Beyond Words Productions was born.
Well, time to close out the show, so I should probably say the thing. You seem exceptional, to be very honest. I find your business so interesting. What you're doing is so cool to me.
Thank you.
As a reminder, you can find all the old installments of this show at WSUM.org under the podcast tab. Goodbye for now, Madison. I will be back, and I certainly hope Jeb will be back at the same time next week.